The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Bill Meyer.
It's 11 minutes after 6, Wheels Up Wednesday, and so proud to have newly elected State Rep Alex Scarlatos on the program. And, of course, Oregon Army National Guard veteran helped thwart that Paris terror attack. What was that going on 9 years ago? How are you doing this morning, Alec? Great to have you on.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You have been making the rounds incredibly, because of the Daniel Penny trial, and the jury is out on that trial right now, and we're waiting for a verdict to come in on this one. Of course, Daniel Penny accused of, he's been charged with murder, and they're trying to take him down pretty hard on this. And what is your overall impression of that, having been someone who thwarted a terror attack at the same time? And from what I understand, you were actually ready to pull the trigger on that guy that you ended up taking down. Wasn't that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did, and I tried, and unfortunately the gun didn't work. We were just fighting for our lives, doing whatever we could to survive. But I would say that the correlation between our event and what happened to Daniel Penny is pretty similar, just in that this guy wasn't trying to kill anyone overtly, but then again, neither was Daniel Penny. His response was proportional to the threat that Jordan Neely was presenting, and I think he handled it appropriately. Unfortunately, Neely still ended up dying, whether it's from the chokehold or something else. But regardless, I don't think Daniel Penny did anything wrong. He didn't respond in any way that wasn't proportional to the threat that Neely presented. And therefore, I just don't think that he should be charged at all. And I think the fact that this is happening in New York is the only reason that it's even going to court, which is a shame.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a George Soros prosecutor that is involved in doing this. And that's a very sad statement in and of itself. But it kind of makes me wonder about what's happening here in the state of Oregon. If you get to the point where people will be afraid to step up or get involved, I already know people that will already say, you know, if you're a concealed carry person, and for instance, and you know, and there's a big fight, you know, you be careful about what fights you want to go in. I'd imagine you've probably heard the same kind of stories now that you're going to be a state representative in the state.
Yeah, and I think the application is even broader than that. I mean, I feel like in Southern Oregon, we're probably better off than a lot of people. We have pretty good sheriffs down here. But I think in general across the state, I mean, this applies to many different situations. I mean, there's good Samaritan laws for a reason, and they're to protect people that are trying to do the right thing and trying to help. And when you see a rogue prosecutor like this go after someone for doing the right thing, I think it sometimes has a chilling effect as to, you know, whether you want to stop and help that person on the side of the road that's broken down, or whether you want to intervene in the fight that's happening in the parking lot. I mean, because you never know how a situation is going to develop and how things can go sideways. So I think a lot of people just aren't going to put themselves out there to begin with, because you know, you might find yourself in a Daniel Penny type situation. And I mean, hopefully he's acquitted.
What do you think? What does your gut tell you, though, if you were a betting man? I know speculating on a jury trial is always isn't always a surefire winner. We know that. You never know.
I do think they acquit him, and I really hope they do, because even in New York, I mean, there's got to be a handful of people on that jury that have been in this exact situation, or were in a situation like this and no one did anything and they hope someone did. I mean, there's, even without living in New York, I could understand the situation that those people were put in. And, you know, many of them even said that they were grateful that Daniel Penny stepped up. And so I don't think that he gets convicted. And I really hope he doesn't. It would be a travesty.
I hope you're right too, Alec. Alex Scarlatos with me this morning. You know, Alec, it one of those things is that there has been, especially in the blue hive mind states like Oregon and New York in California, various others, there's almost been a development of anarcho-tyranny in which you have anarchism or anarchy in which so often the police are either hamstrung or aren't available or there's nobody there to protect you. But then if you do try to protect yourself, then the tyranny comes in like, hey, what are you doing? Right. You know, it's what reminds me of that with Daniel Penny. And are you familiar with the Michael Strickland case in Portland that happened a number of years ago? Did you ever hear about that one?
Yes, I did hear about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it reminded me a little bit of that particular case, too. Michael Strickland, I think there's still an appeal going on. Maybe that was turned down. I don't know. I haven't kept track of it lately. But, you know, a guy has been beaten up by the BLM mobs up in Portland a few times. I think he actually had an arm broken at one point. And then when a mob went after him one time in another, he was a reporter, you know, a YouTube reporter. And then he ends up drawing a gun when the mob comes to him to go after him. And he didn't even fire a shot. But yet, you know, in Portland, they convicted him of felonies. And I'm hoping this is not a growing trend. I don't know. Maybe is it just Portland, or do you think that Oregon in general is under threat?
I mean, I haven't heard of anything like that happening down in Southern Oregon. But the fact that it's even going on in places like Portland and New York is scary because that's where a lot of these bad ideas come from. And I feel like if they can get away with it there, those ideas will spread. It's the double standard is what really angers me about the whole thing. I mean, this is, you know, a day after Hunter Biden got pardoned for his multiple crimes, including gun crimes, and he gets pardoned like nothing ever happened. Meanwhile, they're, you know.
Alec, you have to understand, though, Hunter Biden, he was a recovering addict, remember? The recovering addict is the saint these days. You got to remember that, okay?
Well, all right. That's the point I'm trying to drive to is, you know, Hunter Biden gets pardoned for all this stuff. They don't prosecute Democrats for many, many things, but the people they do go after are good Samaritans and veterans like Daniel Penny. I mean, you see what they're doing to Pete Hegseth, who's Trump's SecDef nominee.
You think he's going to make it through it? The latest accusations are, when they're talking openly about maybe having slipping Ron DeSantis in there to take his place, I think they're serious. You know, there are serious headwinds, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I heard that thing about Ron DeSantis as well. I'm just not sure if I take it seriously yet. Mm-hmm. We'll see what shakes out. I mean, I really do hope they stick to their guns with Hegseth. I mean, I could understand why they didn't push harder for like Matt Gaetz, for instance. But Pete Hegseth, I mean, he's the exact kind of person you want and need. And he's the kind of person that veterans want and need and people who are serving in the military want as their leader. I mean, Ron DeSantis is a great guy, and I think he would be perfect for a ton of other jobs in the administration. But frankly, I mean, I think we need a combat veteran in the SecDef role. I would love to see Pete Hegseth do that. And if it can't be Pete Hegseth, I mean, I think it needs to be someone more like Joe Kent than Ron DeSantis. Mm-hmm. But again, that's no slight at Ron DeSantis, I think.
I think the one advantage that Ron DeSantis might bring to it, Alec, is that Ron is extremely experienced in dealing with recalcitrant big bureaucracy. That might be the only advantage, I think, that Ron DeSantis might bring. Pete might be fine in a situation like that. He hasn't handled the bureaucracies, but you could have a strong deputy secretary of defense, you know, that might know that swampy style or the swampy side better. When you think that would make sense, you know, knows how to negotiate the swamp a little bit.
I mean, I know, again, I don't disagree whatsoever. I just think, you know, Ron DeSantis could apply that resume to any other job. Mm-hmm. I think when you're talking about SecDef in particular, I mean, I want someone who's frankly lost friends in combat. Like, I want people who know what that job entails when they send people to war. And again, I know Ron DeSantis is a veteran as well, but, you know, he was a JAG. And again, I want someone who's lost friends in combat. I mean, I wouldn't even fit that role myself. I want someone who, you know, was in it and knows what it means to send people to combat.
That's certainly an interesting time right now. You're going to be coming in there as a state representative. A fourth district, or which district is that again? In your
fourth state house district, pretty much the southern I-5 corridor, everything between Winston all the way down to Central Point.
What are you hearing overall about what the tone of the next session will be? Because Republicans in the minority. And the Democrats apparently don't need the Republicans, but, you know, I'm kind of the opinion that at the very least, Republicans should be disruptive. I don't know if you have an opinion on that or not, because otherwise everyone's just showing up to help Democrats pass their bills. How do you see it playing out?
No, I pretty much agree with you completely. I mean, it looks like we're going to be in the supermajority, which, yes, means that the Democrats don't need us for really anything. So if that's the case, the best we can do is try to throw up roadblocks and stop whatever the Democrats tried to do. And frankly, the rumor is that they're trying to pass a lot of terrible gun bills this next session. So I'm going to do, I mean, that's one of my pet subjects, especially, you know, surviving a terrorist attack in a gun-free continent. So I'm going to do whatever I can to stop those in particular. And I think that's something that I'm kind of uniquely suited to fight. But we'll see how much traction we get up in Salem, because the Democrats do run everything, and we need to get a handle, I think, on the next redistricting in 2030 if we're ever going to have a chance to actually take this state back, because we're really, even as a voter registration, we're really not as Democrat as our reputation implies.
But the redistricting of a couple of years back, it certainly did benefit Democrats, and it protected some Republicans that were already in some pretty safe, safe seats, in my opinion, there, too. Well, Alec, we'll certainly keep in contact with you. Did Fox and Friends treat you okay earlier this morning? I know you had to get up at 3:30, you know, to chat with them.
Oh, yes, I was very tired, but it went well, and it was a fantastic interview. They're always great people.
Okay, glad to hear it, and we'll be in touch, and thanks for waking up, or staying up, I guess might be a better way of describing it, staying up and coming on the show this morning, okay? Be well, and thanks.
Well, anytime. Thanks so much for having me.
Alec Scarlatos, once again, and Oregon Army National Guard veteran, and, of course, incoming state rep, State Representative-elect. Maybe we'll just call them that. There, I got it, all right? 23 minutes after 6, you're on KMED, 99.3 KBXG.
As a business owner, you like
even more tonight.
Early evenings at 8.
How we can beat this.
News Talk 106.3 KMED.
Hi, I'm Steve Potter, body shop manager at Lithia Body and Paint, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
25 minutes after 6, Wheels Up Wednesday, and that means Eric Peters will be joining me here in about 5-6 minutes or so. You can join the conversation at 770-563-3770-KMED if you wish to. Daniel Penny, we don't know what the result of that trial is. Everyone kind of on pins and needles on this one. But the big story, the big national story, as far as I'm concerned, though, is the talk about swapping out Pete Hegseth. And this was first reported by a Wall Street Journal yesterday. President-elect, I was talking about that with Alex Garlatos in just a moment ago. And he's hoping that they go to the mat, but what do you think about this this talk about replacing Pete Hegseth, the Fox and Friends weekend host here, with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis? This is what they're saying. Considering Florida Governor Ron DeSantis as a possible replacement for Pete Hegseth, his pick to run the Pentagon, according to people involved with the discussions, amid Republican senators' concerns over mounting allegations about Hegseth's personal life. Picking DeSantis, a 2024 GOP primary rival for the presidency, would amount to a stunning turn for Trump, they say. But he would also find in the governor a well-known conservative with a service record who shares Trump's and Hegseth's view on calling what they see as woke policies in the military. Trump allies increasingly thinking that Pete Hegseth might not survive further scrutiny, according to people. They're considering the next 48 hours to be crucial. This having to do with accusations of drinking on the job, and yet there are people with concerns, Veterans of America, who are saying that this did not happen. But, boy, I'll tell you, they're just they're throwing a lot of smoke. They're throwing a lot of mud at that situation. But anyway, there we go. Pete Hegseth is on the bubble this morning. If you have any thoughts on that, that would be great. Give me your take. I don't know. I am mixed on Pete Hegseth. I think Pete's a good guy. I've talked to him when he had his book out a little while ago. And he seemed like a good guy, good service record. I'm torn about this because I appreciate his focus on the veteran issues and the need to make changes. My concern is there is no bigger bureaucracy in D.C. than the military-industrial complex. And I just don't know if not having run or even been involved in any of those kind of situations, if you have enough of that particular right stuff, it's almost like I would say, Pete for Department of Veteran Affairs, and I would say, hey, boom, go right in it. And you're a perfect fit on that. I don't know. And yet, I'm not convinced that Ron DeSantis would be the best replacement for Pete Hegseth, although he would certainly do good. I'm just getting to also to the point where we're just going to empty Florida out of all of its good people in the Trump administration, and then Florida goes to hell, and then the next presidential election we get problems. I don't know. Well, hopefully there are people in the farm team to be able to help pick that up. I don't know. 29 minutes after 6. Hey, Dave's here. Hey, Dave, how are you doing this morning? What's on your mind, huh?
Pete Hegseth.
Yeah.
I seen him do a documentary where he was talking to a Muslim, a guy that was the keeper of the place where Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist. And he did it by the King of Jordan telling him that you have to do it from the Christian perspective, not the Muslim. And so he's considered the most educated person on Christianity and the baptism of Jesus by John the Baptist.
What the Islamic fellow that Pete was talking to? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Pete Hegseth is maybe not perfect, but who of us say that? He just needs to go forward and sin no more.
Well, no, it's not a matter of perfection at this point. It's a matter of what can pass. What can pass the lily-livered Senate's GOP senators in the that's what it's about. It's about passing the Senate. It's not about whether Pete is a decent guy or, like I said, and let's face it, if you've been in the military like that and you've also been in the rarefied media air like Pete has been, he's a good-looking guy. Women love him, apparently, and the guys want to be like him. Would you agree with me on that? Pretty much, that's how.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, all right.
I also want to say.
But also, no, just let me finish my thought, though. No, let me finish my thought, though, Dave. That is a high type A personality, testosterone-fueled kind of lifestyle, which doesn't always jibe with what they're going to need as a Secretary of Defense. I could be wrong about that, though. Okay?
Just saying. I think it does. And I think we need to hold the Senate's feet to the fire and get an up or down vote. If they vote against him, they should be then primaried. And by the way, Elon Musk said he would fund their opposition if they turn down any of the picks for President Trump.
Okay. I want Elon Musk to adopt us all. Can we do that?
Yeah, I'd like it too.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, no worries. All right. Thanks, Dave. 6:32. All right. Hold the calls here for just a moment, unless you want to talk with Eric Peters. We're going to have Eric Peters on after news here. And Eric Peters, epautos.com, automotive journalist. We got a lot to talk about. And boy, things changing over at Chrysler. He's got a review of the Hyundai. Is it Hyundai? No, Kia. Yeah, he has a Kia that he's going to be talking about that he was driving around quite a bit and a whole bunch more. All coming up.
You want price transparency? I'll give you price transparency.
Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
Wheels up Wednesday. Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. He is out there getting ready to make the swamp cry. How are you doing this morning, Eric? Welcome back.
I'm good, and I'm very grateful that I don't have an EV to drive this week because it's extremely cold all of a sudden out here in the woods of Southwest Virginia.
You talk about in EP Autos, we've discussed for a long, long time, though, now, how people don't realize that the electric vehicle just sitting still is grinding away on a lot of power over time, mm-hmm. and you let it sit for a few days, and it loses a lot of its charge, doesn't it? Just the way it goes.
Oh, yeah, and when it sits, when it's cold, like it is right now, outside, the thing has to work really hard to try to keep itself warm. A lot of people don't realize that they have an internal system that's essentially a heater for the battery, because if the battery cools too much, it no longer is capable of accepting a charge, and it might actually brick, and that is catastrophic for an EV. So it's constantly drawing power. Now, it's not that much when it's temperate outside. I've had experience with this. You might wake up the next day and notice that your vehicle dropped, say, 5 miles of range overnight. You know, it's small, not catastrophic. But I can tell you, when it's this cold outside, if you didn't keep the thing plugged in, you can have lost 10% or more of whatever your range was the prior evening, and that is significant.
I'm kind of wondering, what do the car dealers that are selling the electric cars have to do? Do they have to keep them all plugged in all the time, or how does that work? I've never really looked.
Yeah, I mean, they have to serially plug them in. It's like musical chairs. You know, go plug this one in, then plug the next one in. I assume they hire lot boys to do that.
Yeah. You realize how PO'd people would be if with their regular internal combustion engine, their you know, gas, diesel, or natural gas, or whatever else you might be running it with, if their vehicle lost range just sitting there for a number of days? Can you imagine?
Oh, it would be intolerable.
Yeah.
It would not happen. And that's one of the indices of insanity of the time that we live in, because people wouldn't put up with it. And more to the point, neither would the government. If any car company were to sell a vehicle that had, it in effect, a slow drip in its gas tank that caused the thing to be losing energy all the time, there would be a massive recall and there would be class action lawsuits.
Indeed. Well, I guess, though, when you're politically favored, that's the way it works. And speaking of politically favored, and I know some people might be upset for me even bringing up Elon Musk in this conversation, but I still think that he is one of the smartest yet most talented grifters of all time. And, you know, when I see him getting, I mean, it's great that he wants to be Doge in the Trump administration. And yet at the same time, I can't help but think that this is another way to leverage the Tesla brand. Am I being unduly suspicious about this? And then it's like all of a sudden you have, oh, we have this high tech guy that doesn't hate us entirely. And so that means that he's our friend. It's like, I'm sorry, I can't go there. I just can't.
No, I like to go by facts, and the fact is that a great bulk of the billions that he has pocketed is the result of a grift, and it's a grift that he has not repudiated, you know, that he continues to profit from. And it's fascinating to me that this man, who just 2 years ago was considered anathema by most of the people on quote-unquote our side and beloved by the people on the other side, the left, is now the darling of the right. It's like incandescently lunatic to me. It's like that scene in Orwell's 1984 where, you know, the party orator shifts gears in mid-speech and declares that we're at war with East Asia now, and the crowd just takes it as that's okay, that's the new received truth.
And I noticed that, you know, people make a big deal about, well, look at Elon's stock price that's been going up. And there was, you know, a Trump guy, what was it, Eric Trump, no, Donald Trump Jr., ends up joining this one company yesterday on the board, and the stock goes up 130%, you know, in one day. And see, all we're doing is replacing one set of grifters with another set of grifters. And I'm just hoping they do a better job at grifting that helps us, maybe. I guess that's what I get concerned about. And there's been very little talk about that, that I just don't want, you know, the new boss, same as the old boss, with just a different bent, I guess.
Well, I share your concerns. And, you know, one of the facets of this Doge business, where is that in the Constitution? How did that become an office? This thing began years ago when we started having czars. I'm not sure who the first czar was or whatever it was, the drug czar, I think.
Yeah, I think it was drug czar in the Reagan years. Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, and ever since then, these presidents, who, you know, both parties just appoint these people who sort of have plenary powers not authorized by the Constitution to be czars of things.
And they use Soviet or totalitarian names. You mean to use czar as an example.
Right.
Or even then, even worse, Department of Homeland Security. You can almost hear the, what is that, that Nazi theme from Adolf Hitler, you know, the fatherland,
you know? And of a piece with that. Trump appointed this drug pusher, this four-star police general from Florida, to be the head of all things, the Drug Enforcement Administration.
Yeah, but he withdrew. Well, hold on, though. He withdrew his nomination yesterday. He's not going to be there, okay?
Yeah, he withdrew it, absolutely, but only after a tsunami of outrage that came forward. And I'm hoping that the same fate will befall this awful woman that Trump has tapped to be the Surgeon General, who was a complete COVIDiot during the pandemic.
Yeah, the guy with the DEA you were writing about, though, he actually he arrested a priest or a preacher, minister of some sort?
Not only did he arrest him, he did it publicly and publicly humiliated the man and excoriated him before the press as being somebody who was endangering public health by opening up his church to people who weren't forced to go in there. I think that's a really important point. You know, nobody had a bayonet shoved in their back and said, oh, you have to go to this man's service, or you know, you have to go into a store or a gym or whatever. People should have been free to make that choice. So the people who were free to make that choice were arrested by this guy, who was a particularly vicious enforcer of all of the COVID kabuki stuff.
That makes me wonder who's running the Trump transition team, because there have been some pretty darn good picks that have come out of this. But just a cursory reading of some newspaper articles might have been in order before nominating this guy. What do you think?
Oh, without question. And on this particular thing, it's a sensitive point for me because I don't ever want this to happen again. The COVID kabuki or anything like it. And it really bothers me that Trump, who has to know he was elected to a great extent by people who were furious about all the COVID stuff, would appoint people like that, not once, but twice. So I think it's extraordinarily important that we, on our side, rise up in fury against this, just as we would have if some leftist person had assumed the office and was trying to impose the COVID kabuki on us again.
In other words, keep an eye on our own people, too, just as closely as we would be if Kamala had been elected. That's just the bottom line here. Don't be
laid
out. All right.
Even more so.
All right. It's a 6:45 talking with Eric Peters. If you have a question or comment, maybe a question about a vehicle you're looking at or maybe a car problem, and he's the guy to talk to right now. We talk these kind of things all the time. Call him now at 770-563-3770-KMED, and we'll continue with Wheels Up Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We got to talk about Carlos, okay? We got to talk about Carlos and a bunch more all coming up. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Just look at it.
It looks great in the moonlight.
And talk about quiet operation? We're not waking up the neighbors.
So smooth and sleek. American Industrial Door knows their stuff.
Okay, it's my turn. Give me the remote.
Mom? Dad?
Yeah?
Are you gonna stop playing with the new garage door soon?
Go back to bed, sweetie.
If your garage door is keeping you up at night, it should be for all the right reasons. Visit AmericanIndustrialDoor.net.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided. By Dish.
When choosing a contractor, you need a professional. Clauser Drilling's professionalism starts with their organized office staff and continues with their experienced field staff. A family-owned business, Clauser Drilling employs qualified individuals with diverse skills and experience who share the same passion. This means dependable results you can trust. Don't take a risk on your well contractor. For drilling, deepening, or repair, call 541-476-7795 or visit clauserdrilling.com. Serving Southern Oregon since 1971. Thanks to you, they're great customers.
It's the Bill Myers Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
6:47, Wheels Up Wednesday with Eric Peters on the program. Eric, it is great to have you on. Now, we have to talk about Carlos Tavares. Big changes at Stellantis, and many people may not know what Stellantis is, but essentially, is this the death knell of Chrysler? Chrysler circling the drain, another sign of this, or is there still a chance to pull it back from the brink? What are you thinking?
Well, we'll see. Let me preface it by telling people listening that Stellantis is the corporate entity that owns the Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep brands here in the United States. It's a European brand, and Carlos Tavares was, until just a few days ago, the CEO. And he was fired because of the catastrophic performance of the past year. The brands I just mentioned are all in terrible straits and potentially won't be here a year from now, particularly Chrysler and Dodge. Chrysler's got nothing anymore. They've got a minivan to sell. That's it. Dodge has been left with two models to sell, a little crossover that is kind of like, I don't know, it's like going to McDonald's to get a soy latte. It's just the wrong car for the brand. And the Durango, which we'll talk about some more if you want to, which is the last straggler that still has a V8 engine. But they've only got these two models. And everything they sell, all of these brands, is vastly expensive, and most people can't afford it. So they're in really precarious shape. But guess what? Carlos Tavares walks away with, my understanding is, for the last year of his leadership, something like $44 million to just destroy those brands.
How can you get $44 million to walk away from destroying a car company? Or at least, standing by idly while the car company is being destroyed around him.
There's a complete disconnect between performance and compensation, and it's not just Stellantis. I don't want to single them out. Over at General Motors, Mary Barra's compensation approaches $30 million a year. At Ford, Farley is paid something comparable. And it's out of all proportion to the earnings and profitability of the company. I wrote an article a couple of years ago talking about General Motors at its height, circa 1969, mm-hmm. When Chevrolet Division back then, all by itself, had more market share than all of General Motors does today. And the CEO of General Motors at that time was paid a few hundred thousand dollars a year. I think the figure was $250,000 or $300,000 a year. And even with inflation, it's not even a fraction of what Mary Barra is presiding over today. And GM has a tiny, something like 14% share relative to the past of market share now.
14% market share, that's it mm-hmm. for GM now?
Yeah. Oh,
I seem to recall when I was a kid, when we were both kids, about the same time, really,
yep.
weren't they like 55, 60%
yes.
at some point?
That's exactly the point. Yeah, General Motors at its height owned about half of the entire American car market.
And then you had Ford, and then a little bit less with Dodge, I would imagine.
Yes.
And then, of course, American Motors. Yee.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's a real problem now because these people, and it's probably general, it's not just the car industry, who are hired to oversee these big corporations are paid just staggering amounts of money, irrespective of whether they do a good or a terrible job.
Maybe what we're looking at here is a part of that everything bubble sort of economy that we've had. You have the landfill economy, which is you're not supposed to fix anything and just put it in the landfill. And then just so much money thrown at Wall Street, as long as you're able to goose the stock price, that's the worth of the CEO.
The financialization of things.
Yeah.
And the part that disturbs me the most and saddens me the most, if Chrysler and Dodge, for example, go away, there are thousands, even tens of thousands of people whose lives are going to be vastly disrupted by that. Who are going to lose their jobs. A lot of them are going to be having to deal with finding a new career in their 50s, 60s. And it's disgusting and appalling, and it's not their fault. And, and the people whose fault it is don't have to pay any meaningful consequences.
I know that people in Congress have talked about from time to time, of limiting CEO pay to some marked percentage of, like, their workers' wages and things like mm-hmm. that. Now, I know you're a libertarian. I lean libertarian, too, although I'm not a libertarian party member here. Do you think something like that would be wise these days to put things a little bit more back in perspective?
It might be. It's a tough one for me because you're right. I am a libertarian, and I like to hew true to the principles of it. But if the Titanic's sinking and you can keep it afloat by, quickly welding some panels to the side of the ship that'll hold it above water for a while, I'd be for that.
Hmm. The challenge that you see here in a situation like this is that Carlos Tavares over at Stellantis is no different from the Mary Barra, no different than Anthony Fauci, no different yep. than anybody out there within the government system, in which they can do the worst job and do some of the worst crimes and nothing ever happens to them. I mean,
yes.
that's the real issue we're talking about, isn't it?
It is. And And you know, when I have this conversation with some of my friends in the conservative world, I point out to them that this is a real danger, because what it does is to feed rightly into the fury of people who may be inclined to support communism. You know, they see
this, right,
and they see how there's this pyramidal structure where, as you say, people at the very apex are able to loot, pillage, and plunder and get away with it to a degree that's beyond obscene. Zero accountability, whereas the average guy who works his butt off, you know, gets up at 5 in the morning and schleps to some hard job, puts in 8 or 9 hours.
And oh, by the way, and then is told that your union is evil for negotiating for a pay raise,
yep,
for you, right? You know, that,
yep,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So until we can figure out a way to, I don't know, to reconnect performance to compensation, I'm open to almost any solution.
Yeah. My only issue with unions is that in Oregon, we have public employee unions that are incredibly politically powerful, and it's a corrupt system here in Oregon. And that's my problem with unions, because public employee unions own the government, because they negotiate for their pay, and then they pay for the election of people that they negotiate their pay with. There's no third party. There's no, you know,
yep,
arm's length.
Yeah, they have the coercive apparatus of the state behind them, and that is a problem, and I agree with you completely. Now, you know, if private organizations want to get together collectively to leverage their power as a labor group, which is what a union is, against a corporation, I don't have an issue with that.
Me neither. Okay. Eric Peters with me, epautos.com. Let me go to the lines here. Good morning. You're with Eric. Have a question, comment, anything on your mind. Who's this?
This is Tom here.
Tom, go ahead.
All this talk about the tariffs, and I was reading an article, and I was astounded when the article declared that 88% of the pickup trucks in America come from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I've just, and it makes me wonder, is that due because of all these crazy regulations, the government? I mean, has the government driven those plants, these auto manufacturing plants?
Yeah, across the border. Yeah.
Yeah, now yes, listen on the air.
Absolutely. Right across the border in Hermosillo, Texas, for example, General Motors, Ford, Stellantis, the Ram truck brand, they all have operations over there. And it's twofold. On the one hand, they were driven out of this country because the cost to manufacture things in this country has become unsustainable, to use a word that's loved by the left. But the other aspect of it is that the profit is greater for the manufacturers. You know, they can work in an environment where labor costs are lower, regulatory costs are lower, and they can bring in these high-margin vehicles, which is particularly what trucks are. You know, they're selling,
yeah,
these things now for $70,000, and it's just a pickup truck. You know, and they can make $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 per sale, as opposed to making, say, $500 on the sale of an entry-level economy type car.
Yeah, my Chrysler came from Mexico, too, has got the sticker,
mm-hmm,
you know, inside that. It did note, though, that the engine was made in the United States. The engine,
mm-hmm,
was made, maybe the transmission, too, for that matter. But apparently, the assembly costs are much lower. Right.
Yep.
Mm. Let me go to line three here. Line three, you're on with Eric Peters. Good morning. Who's this?
Yes. Good morning. This is Tracy in Mount Vernon, Washington.
Tracy, good to have you on. What's your question for Eric? Go ahead.
So we're all on camera here now, literally. First off, that Ford plant, the big truck factory, is down in Hermosillo, state of Sonora, mm-hmm, about 80 miles south of Nogales. So, yep. Mexico's got all the truck factories. So my question this morning, it's actually something I saw on the news. They've been warning us to not have license plate covers in the state of Washington because of cameras. And then I see in the news the other day.
Oh, the license plate cameras, anything that obscures them, right? Anything that,
yep,
obscures the ability,
correct,
for Big Brother.
And they're going to start fining people. And now I just saw the cities of Cedar Woolley and Mount Vernon have signed up with a company called Flock Safety to deploy traffic cameras with license reading capabilities, license plate reading capabilities.
Oh, Tracy, they're doing that everywhere. I think they're doing that here in Southern Oregon, too. Isn't that the case, Eric? It's everywhere,
oh, yeah,
you go.
The formal name for these things is Automated License Plate Reader, ALPR. That's the acronym. And if you look up when you're at an intersection and you see at the traffic light that it's got a camera above it, that's part of the system. And they are erecting this panopticon where they'll be able to automatically, this doesn't require a cop pointing the thing at you, to automatically just keep track of the movements of every vehicle that's out on the roads at any given time and record it so they know where you were the day before, for example.
But remember, Tracy, it's for your safety, okay?
Yes, it's for our safety, and supposedly every 30 days they will erase the archive file, but they're going to strategically deploy these in places like Mount Vernon, Washington, which is on I-5 and at the entrance and exits to the city. And you know, we have a constrained transportation grid here. So this is a, you know, there's a lot of strange things that can go on with it. They want to, they claim it's to catch criminals, but I think this is going to be like China, my God.
Well, it is to catch criminals. You just have to understand what the definition of criminal is, according to them, which is us. And they will make it criminal to exceed your carbon footprint, for example. So they'll know that you've been driving too much and you've been burning too much fuel, and they'll be able to dun you accordingly. That's the sort of thing that they're going to do.
Tracy, bottom line is you can't hate them enough, okay? And keep fighting that with your local authorities here. And I wish we could do that here. I don't know if there is a way to get rid of that. Because, you know, what ends up happening, Eric, is that then you hear about, oh, there was the murder in your town, and, oh, police were able to find it because of the license plate readers. And then everybody goes to sleep not thinking about the downside of the total panopticon surveillance system.
There's a saying that hard cases make bad law, meaning, you know, you've got this extraordinary situation where people are understandably upset about something, and then it leads to a law that is awful, you know, tyrannical, that ends up causing more damage than whatever the issue was with regard to the incident that provoked it.
Let me go to line four. Hi, good morning. Who's this? You're with Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. This is Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Hi there. Hey, so what's one of the things Trump can do when he gets back in the office to bring car prices down, or can he do anything? Will they ever come back down?
Great question. Thank you.
Yep. He could do a great deal. One thing he could do is repeal the chicken tax, which makes it effectively impossible for manufacturers like Toyota, and there are others too, that make small, affordable pickup trucks. We've talked on the air, Bill and I, about the Toyota Hilux Champ, which is a stripped-down basic version of the Tacoma pickup. The difference is it costs $13,000 elsewhere. You can't buy a Tacoma here for anything less than about $30,000. Trump could absolutely do that. There are many things that he could do. He could call into question the whole federal motor vehicle safety standard thing and say, look, you know, this is more of a tort issue. If a vehicle is defective and it results in loss of control and somebody is injured, well, let that person obtain damages in court. It's not about the federal government decreeing that a car has to have 6 or 8 airbags and backup cameras and advanced driver assistance technology.
And must be able to withstand a boulder dropped at it from 60 stories up. You know, that kind of thing.
An easy way to understand this, for people who are on the fence and who think that I'm arguing for unsafe cars, I point out that if you were to pick a 2010 model year Mercedes S-Class and reproduce that exact same car today,
it would not pass. It wouldn't pass.
It would not pass.
Yeah.
It would be considered unsafe under federal standards, which is an idiocy.
Eric Peters with me, epautos.com. Let me go to the next line. Good morning. You're with Eric. Who's this?
Yeah, Ron Grant's passed.
Go ahead, Ron.
There's a big problem with this cameras on license plates. Number one, it's kind of like a gun. A gun, you know, could be driving along the highway and they would still attack the gun. They should be going after the person inside, identifying the person inside, because you can't know that the person that's driving the car owns the car that then the person could be fined or gone after.
Yeah, what do you think about Ron's thought on that? That you know, if you're concerned about people, you should be you know, going for the people rather than the vehicle.
Well,
what do you think?
That's right, but I'd go deeper. I think if we are living in a free society, supposedly free people should have the right to come and go without being monitored, without being essentially presumed to be guilty of something, which is what this whole thing is premised on. We have to keep track of everybody because you never know, somebody might do something. It's no different to me than saying, well, the government should have authority to come into your home at any time to check to see whether you're doing anything illegal.
Well, remember, Kamala Harris was talking about, well, we need to come in there and check and see how you're storing your guns. Just because, remember.
Exactly right.
Oh, my goodness. Let's grab one more. By the way, thank you, Ron. Let me go to line three. Hi, good morning. You're on with Eric Peters. Question, comment, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. This is Kathy in Medford.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi there, and I love this show. Love Eric Peters.
Glad you enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome. I am in the market for a car. I have a 2011 GMC Terrain that is starting to have engine problems, catalytic converter, timing belt. and love the car. It's got 94,000 miles on it.
Boy, that's not very high mileage, though, is it, Eric? That's not really.
No, not at all.
So I'm debating, should I put the money into it? I did the catalytic converter, and the timing belt they said is another $3,500.
Wow.
Or do I?
Whew.
I know.
That's way high. I think you should get a second opinion from another shop.
Okay. Good. I'll go do that.
And I would say, you know, roughly $1,500-ish to do the timing belt on that thing. And if that's essentially all that it needs, you're, in my opinion, well advised to pay that and keep that thing, because with 99,000 miles on it, you've got at least another 100,000 miles on it before anything else major begins to fall apart on you.
What do you think about that? Okay.
I love that idea, because I was going to go used car shopping today.
Well, nothing wrong with used car shopping, too. I'm just saying, though, that, you know, if you can, you know, go with a good local shop here and get a better deal on that. Yeah, $3,500 for a timing belt, that sounds a little high to me, too.
Sounds way high. And the other point, too, I'd like to make is, you know your car. You know, you can be comfortable knowing that other than the timing belt and the catalytic converter, it's in good shape. You know how it was maintained, so you can feel secure in driving it. You know, any used car ultimately is kind of a pig in a poke. You don't really know exactly what you're going to get.
All right, so have a good time with it, and go shopping around for a better deal on that. Yikes, man, $3,500, the cost of a used car to do a...
I bet it's a dealer that's quoting her that.
Yeah, could be. Well, your review last week was the Kia. We said we were going to talk about the Kia. The Kia Sorento is the
plug-in
review.
Hybrid.
Yeah, plug-in hybrid. And what was your overall thought on that? Because I'm kind of looking at the plug-in hybrid as a perfect compliance car for everything. You don't need to plug it in, but, you know, if they're squealing at you, you can kind of flip them the bird and plug it in and go into town or whatever it is. But what was your overall impression of that?
Well, what I like about it, just as a general thing, I love it when the engineers who are smarter than the bureaucrats find a way to get around the bureaucrats. You know, the bureaucrats decree you've got to have these zero emissions devices, the electric car. So the engineers came up with this brilliant concept of the plug-in hybrid, which can be an electric car. You can plug it in just like an electric car. You can charge it up. You can drive it just like an electric car. But the genius thing of it is you don't have to. When you run out of charge, you could just keep on driving.
That's perfect. And then we hear the liberals or the, you know, the big tyrants squealing about people are driving the car with the engine too much, right?
Oh, yeah. This is, you know, now I will say, you know, we've kind of ranked a little bit on the orange man, but because he won the election, Michael Redguard Reagan over at the EPA is out, and he was starting to talk just about that thing, how it was just a tragic crime that people who have these plug-in hybrids aren't plugging them in often enough. Hopefully we won't hear much about that for at least the next 4 years.
What was your overall impression of the Kia Sorento, though? A good deal?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these are great little vehicles when you look into them and, you know, what they offer. And particularly, you know, if you're on a budget, you don't have to pay the extra for the plug-in hybrid, which is also nice. They're very practical. I wish they were a little bit more fun to drive. But, you know, I'm a kind of a kook and I enjoy playing with a clutch. And I probably drive a little bit faster than I'm supposed to. For sure.
I won't tell anyone, okay? Your secret's safe with us here, okay?
Yeah.
No problem. All right. What are you going to be reviewing for next week, huh?
Oh, well, this is an interesting story, Bill. It's, you know, we've talked about how Dodge had to pull the Charger and the Challenger off the roster and how they took the Hemi V8 out of the Ram 1500. But there is still one 2025 model year vehicle that you can get with a V8 engine, and it is a Dodge, and it's the Durango.
And we're going to talk about that next week, then, right?
Okay. And you can still get a Hellcat version of it. That's the last of the Mohicans with the 6.2 supercharged V8 and 700 something horsepower.
Oh, in a pickup truck? Wow.
Mm-hmm. An SUV. It's, you know, the Durango.
Oh, Durango. That's right. Okay. Yeah the SUV. All right. That would have to be four wheel drive to make it work, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you can't have the tires being incinerated just in the first 2 weeks as you own the
thing. Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. I mean, 700 horsepower is just not going to go with two tires in the back of that Durango.
Right.
It's just not going to work. All right. Well, it should be a wild time. We'll talk with you then, Eric. Thanks so much. Okay.
Sounds good, Bill. Thank you.
Eric Peters, once again, epautos.com. Great site. Please support that.